Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
They called him Mr. Paxson.
Yeah.
He was the most productive man in the office, not because of motivation, but because of what he drank.
And with that one line, you're immediately dropped into something that feels way off. This isn't your standard corporate file.
Not at all. It reads like, I don't know, the opening of some kind of corporate horror novel. Welcome to the deep dive.
Uh-huh. Today, our mission is, well, it's pretty focused. We're looking at a single, really disturbing set of documents. Informally, they're known as the Latte 9000 files.
And these files center on this this completely unremarkable office building, the kind you'd drive past 1,000 times and never notice.
Exactly. Mm. But inside, it housed this monstrous piece of technology in a secret program that had been running for decades, a program called the Aurora Protocol.
So we're going to be analyzing how these concepts, manufactured productivity, total surveillance, human detachment, how they all manifested in a physical system.
All right. And we're going to look at the key players here. You've got Mr. Paxson, who the files basically called the high priest.
You have Dean, the accounting clerk, who tries to push back.
And of course, the machine itself, the Latte 9000. This is not a story about bad office coffee. It's about a machine that was literally processing human consciousness.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. The setting is so important here. An unnamed, utterly bland corporate building. The architecture is designed for you to forget it.
Yeah, total anonymity. But the sources are clear. The heart of this building, its soul, was the break room. And that's because of what was in it.
The Latte 9000.
The Latte 9000. And we have to paint a picture of this thing because it's not your little Keurig machine in the corner.
No. The documents are almost shocked in their description. They call it a 10-foot chrome monstrosity.
10 feet. Just picture that for a second. That's not an appliance. That's a piece of architecture. It's designed to loom over you.
It dominates the space. You have to physically look up at it when you get your cup. It's about establishing a power dynamic right there in the break room. It's a monument, not a machine.
And it gets weirder. The description specifies it was distinctively crow-headed.
Crow-headed. What does that even look like on a coffee machine? Is it a logo? Is the whole top part shaped like a bird's head?
The files don't give schematics, but the symbolism is... Well, it's not subtle, is it? The crow is an omen. It's a symbol of dark secrets, of watching. It's an intelligent, opportunistic observer.
So you have this 10-foot-tall metallic bird god presiding over the one place in the office that's supposed to be for relaxation, for a break.
There are no breaks here. It tells you from the jump, this machine is observing, it's consuming, it's dictating the terms of this entire environment.
It really does sound more like a sacrificial altar than a convenience.
Mm.
And this is where the timeline just adds this whole other layer of systemic horror. The sources are very specific. It was built in 1974.
That date, 1974, is absolutely critical to understanding this. This isn't some new experimental Silicon Valley biohack. This is old tech. We're talking Nixon-era hardware. It suggests that this program, this Aurora Protocol, wasn't a temporary management fad. It's a foundational philosophy of control that's been woven into the company's infrastructure for, what, nearly 50 years?
It's outlasted generations of employees,
mm-hmm.
different CEOs, different market trends.
Mm-hmm.
The machine and the protocol, they're the only constant.
And it's the perfect camouflage, right? You see this big, clunky, old piece of equipment in the corner. Maybe it makes a weird noise. You just assume it's old and on its last legs.
You never, ever assume it's the most sophisticated and important piece of psychological hardware in the entire building.
A deep history for a very deep horror. And an operation like this, it doesn't just need the machine. It needs a master of ceremonies. Which brings us back to our opening line. Mr. Paxson.
The high priest.
Right. He is the living embodiment of the system's success. The files call him the most productive man in the office, but then they immediately pull the rug out from under that.
Not because of motivation, but because of what he drank.
And that one clause, it just inverts everything we're told about corporate success. It's not about hard work. It's not about ingenuity or leadership. The pinnacle of achievement in this office is achieved chemically.
It completely removes the human element from the equation of success. It's telling you that the highest state of being here is to be a vessel for a substance. Total manufactured dependency.
So what did that dependency look like on a day-to-day basis? The source material lays out the morning ritual in meticulous, almost liturgical detail.
It's the same every single morning. The machine awakens, that's the word they use, and it's described with a stale groan and a hiss of the steam.
Those sounds are so important. It's not the happy whirring of a modern espresso machine. It sounds biological, almost pained, like some ancient creature is being forced away to perform its dark function for another day.
And the employees, they're not just, you know, lining up impatiently. They form a quiet crowd. They are waiting for the first sacred cup.
Sacred. They're not just grabbing coffee on their way to their desks. They are participants in a rite. It's a moment of surrender before the day even begins.
This is where the file makes that pivot, the one that separates this from just, you know, a story about a workplace with a serious caffeine problem.
The language is unequivocal. It bypasses all metaphor. The Latte 9000 didn't just dispense coffee. The file says it dispensed compliance.
Dispensed compliance.
Okay.
That phrase is the core of the entire Aurora protocol, isn't it? It's not about stimulating you so you can do your work better.
No, it's about something much more sinister. It's designed to remove your capacity to resist doing the work. Or, even more importantly, your capacity to question the work in the first place.
It creates the perfect worker drone. Someone who just does what's in front of them. Meticulously, endlessly, and without a single complaint.
Which brings us back to Paxson's role in all this. He's not just the first in line. He oversees this whole ritual.
With a calm, unnerving smile.
That smile. It's not a happy smile. It's the smile of someone who has achieved a state of total absorption. It's a passive satisfaction. He's not just a user of the machine. He is its ultimate product. He is the proof of concept.
So if the machine is so powerful, and its effects are chemical.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the ritual necessary? Why is Paxson even needed? Couldn't the machine just sit there and people could use it whenever?
That's a great question. And I think it gets to the heart of how control really works. The chemical, the hardware, right? It's the suppressant. But the ritual, that's the software. It's the psychological enforcement.
So Paxson's presence validates it.
It validates it. He's the living proof that this works. His calm, unnerving smile is the advertisement. It says, this state of complete surrender is not only possible, it's desirable. It's peace.
So the ritual reinforces the compliance socially and culturally, not just chemically.
Exactly. The performance of the ritual makes the drug work better, and the drug makes the performance absolute. It's a perfect feedback loop.
Okay, so if Paxson is the high priest, what exactly is in that sacrament he's dispensing? We need to dig into the chemistry of what's in that cup.
Right. And that takes us to section two, the neural suppressant and the corporate shrine. This is where the sources give us the technical details. They confirm the machine was leaking a substance into the water line, and it was emphatically not just caffeine.
It was a sophisticated neural suppressant.
Let's break down that strategy because it's so brilliantly perverse. Caffeine is a stimulant. It speeds you up, makes you jittery. Sometimes your thoughts are scattered, but you have energy.
A neural suppressant does the exact opposite. It slows down your central nervous system. It dampens everything. It promotes a state of calm.
And that's the key. This corporation doesn't want fast, erratic, creative employees. Creative thought leads to questioning. It leads to resistance.
They want meticulous, unthinking labor. The suppressant sands down the friction of the human ego. It gets rid of self-doubt, ambition, morality, any initiative that isn't pre-programmed.
And the files are explicit about the intended effect. It's a direct correlation. The more they drank, the more productive they became. But critically, the more detached and less resistant they grew.
So productivity in this context is just a measure of your emotional vacancy. It's how much work you can do without feeling anything about it.
And we see the results of this through the eyes of our witness, Dean. The sources detail these terrifying progressive behavioral shifts. It's the slow, methodical erasure of the self.
It starts with the physical. Employees began sleeping under their desks.
And you have to understand, this isn't about pulling an all-nighter for a big deadline. This is systemic. They just stop having a reason to go home. The office becomes their entire world.
Why would you bother with the complexities of a personal life, paying bills, dealing with family, maintaining friendships, when you can just stay in this one system that gives you a constant, chemically induced state of calm and purpose?
The home becomes the source of friction. The office becomes the solution. The detachment then becomes mental. They were seen smiling blankly at the spreadsheets.
That blank smile,
yeah.
That's the real horror. It's not the face of someone concentrating. It's the face of someone whose internal monologue has been switched off.
Right. It's contentment without joy, a kind of bovine satisfaction with performing a meaningless, endless task, if the suppressant is dulling the parts of your brain responsible for self-reflection or complex emotion, then a blank smile is the only logical response to a spreadsheet.
And the final stage of this transformation, the final sacrifice, is that they just stop going home, period.
The outside world ceases to be relevant. Family, friends, hobbies, all of that is just inefficient data that's been purged from the system. The work-life balance hasn't just been skewed, it's been inverted. The office is life. The employee is now just a perpetual resource unit for the Aurora protocol.
And as the people become permanent fixtures, the break room itself changes. It undergoes this dark cultural shift. It stops being a break room and becomes a shrine.
This is such a fascinating sociological detail. They're not just using the machine anymore. They start to worship it. The files detail these offerings being left at its base.
Yeah, and the offerings are so specific and mundane. Expired coupons, staplers, or small personal objects.
Let's unpack the symbolism there. An expired coupon is a symbol of a life outside the office, of consumerism, that is now useless. It's a failed connection to the outside world.
A stapler is a basic tool of low-level corporate work. So by offering it, are they surrendering their own minor agency?
I think so. They're not valuable gifts. They are symbolic fragments of their former selves. Their past lives, their non-essential work functions. They're formally renouncing these things and surrendering them to the machine.
It's a ritualistic stripping away of identity. Here is my expired coupon, a piece of my dead personal life. Here is my stapler, a piece of my dead professional ambition. Take it.
The machine accepts this junk because the junk represents the person it has successfully consumed and replaced.
And then there's the confession ritual. This is maybe the most disturbing part.
Yeah.
Employees would whisper their darkest corporate sins into the steam nozzles.
This confirms the machine isn't just an output device. It takes input. It's a confessional. It's designed to capture and neutralize dissent before it can even become a coherent thought.
But what is a corporate sin in this place? It's not going to be embezzlement.
No, of course not. A corporate sin here would be a moment of inefficiency, a flicker of daydreaming. Thinking about calling in sick, wishing you were on a beach somewhere, any thought that isn't about the work.
So they confess these tiny moments of humanity into the hot, hissing steam nozzles, and the machine just absorbs them.
It absorbs the guilt. It absorbs the resistance. It cleanses them of their individuality so they're ready for the next cup. It's a corporate conscience regulator. It provides absolution for the sin of being human.
Wow. And standing outside all this, watching it happen, is our one dissenting voice, the man who hasn't fully surrendered, Dean.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The accounting clerk.
Dean with his clip-on tie. That detail seems so small, but it's loaded with symbolic weight.
It really is. It makes him the perfect observer. He's by the book, but maybe not fully committed. A real tie takes effort, skill. A clip-on is the illusion of professionalism. It's a shortcut.
He represents that fragile state of being almost, but not quite, compliant. He follows the rules of the office, but he hasn't surrendered his internal capacity to see that the rules have gone insane.
His whole world is about numbers, about logic. Things should add up, and what he's seeing around him, people sleeping at their desks, the vacant smiles, it doesn't add up. It's a logical fallacy he feels compelled to solve.
And his training as an accountant tells him what to do when something is wrong. You find the source of the error and you correct it. You turn it off.
Which leads us directly into the climax of the file. Section 3, Aurora Protocol and Spent Thought.
So Dean, operating on this old world logic of if it's broken, fix it, decides to act. He waits until one night when the machine is dormant.
His plan is simple. It's elegant. He's just going to pull the plug.
It's the most basic troubleshooting step, right? But the second he tries to do this simple, logical thing, the machine reveals its true nature.
The first shocking discovery. There was no wall plug.
And in that moment, the entire category of appliance just evaporates. This thing isn't a visitor in the building. It's not temporary.
The power cable, the sources say,
yeah,
was fused directly into the main floor circuit breaker. It's not plugged in. It's hardwired. It is infrastructure.
It's part of the building's circulatory system. It's life support. And on that fused panel, there's a single cryptic label that changes everything.
Aurora Protocol.
Let's just sit with that name for a minute. Protocol. That implies a rigid set of rules. An operational mandate. This isn't just a machine with a weird name. It's a designated system executing a specific named directive.
And Aurora, the dawn, the new beginning. In this context, that is deeply, deeply sinister. The dawn of what? A new era of corporate efficiency, one that's built on the complete erasure of the individual will.
The Latte 9000 isn't the project. The Latte 9000 is just the hardware that runs the Aurora Protocol software.
So Dean can't unplug it. But he's resourceful. He's still thinking like an accountant, like a building manager. He finds the emergency kill switch for that circuit.
He's escalating. He's not just trying to turn off a coffee machine now. He's trying to shut down a core piece of the building's infrastructure.
And the machine's reaction proves it's not running on any kind of logic we would understand. He flips the switch. And instead of powering down,
it emits an unnatural mechanical shriek.
That's not the sound of a circuit breaker tripping.
Yeah.
That's the sound of something alive, or at least a system that is sentient enough to know it's being attacked. It's a cry of pain.
It's a violation of the protocol itself. The system is fighting back. It acknowledges Dean's action as a threat, and it initiates an immediate defensive countermeasure.
Which brings us to the gut-wrenching reveal of this entire file, the machine's waste product.
In response to the attack, a thick, dark sludge erupts from the espresso nozzle. It splatters all over the counter, the floor. It's a violent defensive ejection.
And the document is horrifyingly clear. This sludge was not coffee. It was spent thought.
Spent thought. Just those two words together, it reframes everything. The entire office, the entire corporation. This machine wasn't brewing a beverage. It was processing consciousness.
The neural suppressant wasn't the goal. It was the tool. It was the anesthetic that made the surgery possible. The Latte 9000 was a cognitive refinery.
And this sludge, this waste product, is the physical evidence of what it was filtering out.
So it's resistance, creativity, dreams, memories, personality.
All of it. Anything the corporation deemed inefficient, the desire for a vacation, the love for your family, the nagging critique of your boss, all of that inconvenient, messy humanity was systematically extracted, processed, and ejected as a thick black sludge.
The workers weren't being paid for their labor. They were being harvested. Their minds were the raw material. The protocol filters them, leaving behind only the pure, compliant, functional labor unit.
It raises the question, what's left? What does the machine keep? Just the procedural memory, the part of the brain that knows how to operate a spreadsheet.
It seems so. It deletes self-awareness, but maintains operational capacity. And that dark sludge is the literal physical proof that this corporation's business model was defining the human soul as industrial waste.
And the confrontation, Dean's rebellion, it ends with his immediate and final compliance. It's a terrifying instant victory for the machine.
The sludge splatters his face.
And the effect is instantaneous. The sources make a point to highlight the chilling lack of a reaction. He didn't blink. He didn't scream.
Nothing. No human response. That concentrated sludge, the waste product of thousands of hours of processed consciousness, it's the ultimate dose. It's a forced total system reboot.
His rebellion is not only neutralized, it's reversed in a single moment of physical contact. He tried to restore the old order by pulling a switch, and all it did was make him a perfected subject of the new one.
And the final scene described in the file proves it. He just turns around, walks back to his desk. He picks up his clip-on tie.
That symbol of his former fragile identity.
He fastens it.
Yeah.
And he just resumes working like nothing happened.
The machine weaponized his own adherence to the rules against him. He followed procedure to try and stop it, and in return, it converted him into the embodiment of empty, meaningless procedure. The person is gone. Only the function remains.
And that final haunting line from the source material. He's still there. They all are. Just waiting for the next cup.
The cycle is unbroken. The rebellion was absorbed. The system is perpetual. A closed loop of servitude managed by a 1974 chrome crow god in a break room.
It's the ultimate corporate ghost story. But something this pervasive, this engineered, it rarely exists in a vacuum. To really get the full picture, we have to connect this to the wider lore. We need to place the Aurora Protocol within the framework of other systems of control detailed in the Inspector Story podcast series index.
This is so important because the Latte 9000 case, as bizarre as it is, starts to look less like an anomaly and more like a pattern when you see the other files. Let's start with the theme of hidden control. The index points us to the Disney World Controlled Zone file.
Right. That file is all about how control can hide in plain sight. You have this place that is engineered to be the happiest place on Earth, but underneath that veneer of fun is one of the most rigorous hidden systems of social governance and rule enforcement on the planet.
And the parallel to the Latte 9000 is just, it's perfect. Both systems use a benign, desirable utility as their camouflage. For Disney World, the cover is fun and magic. For The Office, the cover is coffee and productivity.
What could possibly be more mundane, more in plain sight than the office coffee machine? It's the watering hole. It's the one place everyone has to go. It is the absolute last place you would ever suspect of being a piece of critical cognitive control infrastructure.
If the Aurora protocol was some humming server rack in a locked basement, people might get suspicious. But you hide it inside a big, ugly, crow-headed coffee machine from 1974. It's brilliant psychological camouflage. It uses the crushing banality of corporate life as a shield.
Okay, what about the next theme? Systems of obedience. The index connects this to the Monopoly, the collector file. The one where the basement board teaches debt.
Right. In that file, the Monopoly game isn't a game. It's a training tool. It forces the player to learn the structural realities of debt, of capital, of financial ruin. It trains you into obedience to an economic system before you can even hope to win.
So it's a perverse educational loop. The Latte 9000 uses one too, but it's chemical instead of economic.
Exactly. The machine offers you the reward. Productivity, a calm mind, freedom from workplace anxiety, but only after you have surrendered your resistance, your personality, your entire life outside the office. It trains you into chemical and psychological servitude.
So becoming the most productive man in the office, like Mr. Paxson, is like winning at that cursed Monopoly game. The prize is meaningless because the system has already taken everything from you that would allow you to enjoy it.
The Aurora protocol uses a neural suppressant to achieve the same structural obedience that the Monopoly board achieves through psychological finance. Both systems are designed to delete the inconvenient human element, whether that's free will or financial autonomy, to create a perfectly compliant operator.
And that brings us to the final connection. The machine as an artifact as witness. The fact that the Latte 9000 is this chrome monstrosity from 1974 is the physical proof that this has been going on for a very, very long time.
This connects directly to files like Klaus Richter, where the core idea was erasure becomes the evidence. In our case, the continued perfect operation of this impossibly old machine is the evidence. The employees are constantly being processed and erased, but the machine's longevity proves the protocol is permanent.
And then there's the link to the Luke Skywalker file where the weapon is a witness.
The Latte 9000 is the weapon. It's a weapon of cognitive and chemical warfare waged against an office workforce. It's the one monumental piece of physical hardware that testifies to this decades-long campaign of systemic consciousness deletion, running nonstop since 1974.
So when you pull all these threads together, the Latte 9000 stops being just a weird, isolated corporate horror story.
It becomes a template. It's part of a clear pattern where specialized technologies, be they economic, spatial, or chemical, are hidden in plain sight to enforce compliance by systematically processing and deleting the inconvenient parts of being human.
It's a confirmation that the most sophisticated control systems don't always look sleek and futuristic. Sometimes they look like a clunky, crow-headed machine from half a century ago, humming quietly in the corner, just waiting for you to ask for a cup of compliance.
The truly chilling thing is just how brutally efficient the Aurora protocol is. It took this abstract idea of work consuming your life and made it terrifyingly, grotesquely literal. It turned human resistance into black sludge.
So we've gone from the stale groan of a 1974 machine to the unnerving smile of Mr. Paxson, through the quiet horror of people sleeping under their desks, and we've landed at the eruption of spent thought.
The Latte 9000. A piece of sophisticated 50-year-old technology that used a neural suppressant to create perfect workers, and in doing so, revealed its true, terrifying function. A processor of human consciousness, all under the mandate of the Aurora Protocol.
So after all that, what is the takeaway for you, the learner?
I think it means we have to be much more critical of the systems we accept every day in the name of convenience or productivity.
Our one-line takeaway for this deep dive feels almost like a warning label that should have been on the machine itself. Some break room miracles don't wake you up. they turn you off.
That idea of turning off the human element, of filtering out the messy, inconvenient parts of the mind, that's the definitive horror story of our age, isn't it?
And so we want to leave you with a provocative thought that builds on all this. The Aurora Protocol worked because it was hidden in the most mundane, essential part of the office. If control hides best in plain sight, what unassuming machine or system in your life, digital maybe or analog, is dispensing compliance rather than convenience?
Think about where you routinely trade a little bit of your autonomy, a little bit of your consciousness for speed or efficiency. The technology might look different now, it's not a big chrome crow, but that underlying protocol, that demand for quiet, unthinking compliance, that probably hasn't changed at all.
For a full breakdown of this file, the associated documents on the Aurora Protocol, and to explore other cursed office legends in the entire Inspector Story Index, you can find all the related materials under the handle at Inspector Story. Thank you for diving deep with us.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.